Okay, the city council will come to order for our Wednesday, August 25th meeting. Hi, Carla.
Good morning.
Please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Adams?
Okay, so we our first items are communications. If you could read, Carla, read 1177.
Request of Arthur Llewellyn to address council regarding CRC consensus and development.
Morning.
Morning.
So,
this makes me nervous coming in here.
You'll do fine, but if you could just give us your name, and then you'll have 3 minutes, and there's a clock in front of you that will indicate how much time you're using.
I'd ask the council to allow me to finish. I think I can do it within 3 minutes. If I can't, I'll summarize, but I should be able to quickly.
Your name?
excuse me. I'm Arthur Llewellyn. I live downtown and have been following Portland's transportation planning process for many years, and am supportive of light rail and streetcar and the kind of development patterns that Portland practices. I think my principal philosophy is aligned with Metro. I believe in regional planning and urbanism on the regional scale. I have been following the Columbia River crossing process for quite a few years now, and on the 5th of this month, there was an open house at Jansen Beach where I learned of officially proposed design for dealing with Jansen Beach that really seemed to me like it was the best one I've seen yet. And I gave testimony then. There was a public opportunity then in 2 minutes to tell you what you think, and I told them this is the best one I've seen yet. And it's titled The Concept Number One. And 2 days later, it was off the table. And concept D was the consensus, I'm going to quote, consensus of the stakeholders in the planning, the bipartisan bi-state planning committee for what's to be done with the Columbia River crossing. And I feel it's unfair for the public to not learn more about this concept number one, which to me, it is an elegant solution that literally cuts the cost of the project in half. I think it would work better than anything we've come up so far. So I'm here today to present this material you have before you and ask the city council to assure that the public gets a chance to see this and weigh in on what it could do. I could take more than 3 minutes. I have 30 seconds left now to describe what I think is what's fine about it, because I'm very analytical in my why I come and say, here's what I think. And if there's something, some project that I don't think I can support, I'll say, here's why I don't support. So I don't have enough time to really get into exactly why, but I will say that I can't just have no answer. Just say, oh, well, we don't care what your concerns are. We're not going to answer your concerns. That's not right for anyone. There was two papers that I handed out to you. The one has the comparison between concept D and concept number one, and the other one is a comparison of between the 12-lane bridge, an earlier version, and a smaller version of an earlier design, roughly the same, that would allow this project to bring its cost down in size and find public support.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Llewellyn.
Mr. Llewellyn, I want to just mention, thank you so much for all your diligence over the years. I remember you coming to the Planning Commission when I was on 15 years ago, practically. And Mayor Adams is in charge of our city's response on the Columbia River Crossing Bridge, so I'll make sure that I bring this to his attention when he gets back next week.
And also the public, I think, should weigh in, because it's fairly new, and I don't think the public really got to see it. In fact, to me, if it were presented to the Hayden Island residents, that community enlarged, they would be more supportive of, I think. I'm not sure about that, but
okay.
That's my opinion.
Thank you.
Okay.
Charlotte, could you read 1178?
Request of Mike O'Callaghan to address council regarding shelterlessness and unanswered questions.
Morning.
Thank you.
So I think you know the drill. Just give us your name.
I know the drill. Michael O'Callaghan is my name.
And you have 3 minutes.
Okay, and I am off. First of all, I don't know if you saw this morning's headlines in the paper, 25% drop in home housing.
Okay. Can you lift the microphone up, Mike?
Mic up, okay. As I predicted a year ago, homelessness is going to dramatically increase, and it has since I predicted that a year ago, and it's going to dramatically increase again. And from my perspective, shelterlessness is being ignored by this city. First, a few ideas. Commissioner Leonard, I'd like to give you a couple ideas about loos, okay? Bicycle loos, okay? Put portable loos on bicycles, okay? The guy down at the Street Roots had a county-approved, I think it was King County-approved bucket loo, okay? Another one. At construction sites, mandate wherever they put up loos, they put up one for the public. Okay? Easy solutions, really no cost. Okay, another one is to double the tax on unoccupied buildings. Okay, it's a blight on the community. Double the taxes, have the money go toward shelterlessness or homelessness. Another one, tax vehicles that create air pollution can be done today. Please stop these traffic jams. Another one is a zoned camping ordinance. Okay, here's my 10 unanswered questions. Why is my life criminalized when I have no home? And I've asked a lot of authorities these questions and received zero answers. What authority allows the creation of community court, and why was I forced to give up my right to a jury trial if I pleaded not guilty? Why do the PPs, I call them PPs, PPD, PPI, PPS, Parks, and Metro write exclusions that are not generated legally under city code? I've taken this issue up with the numerous authorities. No response. Why do authorities harass and intimidate while writing few citations? 17 out of 17 people that I asked if they were homeless had been harassed by the police within the last week. What authority are the notices of voluntary compliance generated? We get these notices of voluntary compliance. We need to move our stuff or they're going to steal it. Okay, what authority does the police, do Parks, do anybody have to put that down? Don't see any. What authority allows park employees to search my tent and papers on non-parks property? Why is the city not in compliance with state law regarding camping? Why do authorities prohibit self-governing areas where people can construct shelters? Why not a zoned camping ordinance so we can build a place where we can be warm and dry if we want to, and we can have it fenced, and we can be secure from outside influences? Thank you. I appreciate your time. I'll leave the 10 questions, and actually there are only 9. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, well, we have no consent agenda today, so we'll move right to our regular agenda. Carla, could you please read 1179?
Authorize a grant agreement with Cache Oregon for $75,000 to provide financial education and counseling and free tax preparation services to low-income families and individuals in Portland.
This is the second reading, so I guess vote only.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you to all the advocates and volunteers who wrote in to ensure that this stayed in the budget. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Okay, the item passes, and we will read 1180.
Create a local improvement district to construct street and stormwater improvements from south of Northeast Whitaker Way to north of Northeast Prescott Court in the Northeast 136th Avenue Phase 1 Local Improvement District.
Morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. We received no remonstrances against LID formation.
Okay, so this is our first reading and public hearing?
Yeah.
So, okay.
I don't believe anybody's here to testify.
Oh, we do have.
Oh, okay.
You're here to testify on this issue?
Yes, whenever it's
public testimony. Yeah, now's the time.
All right.
Come on up and you can just give us your name, and then you have 3 minutes.
I brought a copy of the letter. There, and it's a two-page letter printed front and back to conserve paper. The letter was, well, first, my name. My name is Steve Marash with Schwab, Williamson & Wyatt. I was here before when the resolution of intent was up for consideration. I'm submitting a letter that was written by my partner, Jill Gelino, who's the main local counsel for public storage. And she's asked me to come and do the hearing and basically explain to you what's in her letter. The first part of her letter is public storage is a little bit upset because the notice of hearing on this matter went to its P.O. box in Glendale, California. No copy was provided to our office, and no copy was provided to Chris Tucker, who's the in-house counsel at Public Storage, who's been tracking this issue, and both myself and Mr. Tucker have been in communications with the city on this issue. I came to the last hearing, so the city knew we were involved. I'm sure it was an oversight, but they were not happy that it didn't go to one of us, because by the time it got to Chris Tucker's desk, the deadline of August 18 had already passed, because it had to work its way up through corporate channels. So Public Storage would like to remind the city that it submitted a remonstrance previously with the written letter of July 28 that was signed by myself on behalf of Public Storage, objecting to the LID to the extent that it would require a property acquisition. I think another property owner, Supreme Steel, also submitted a letter objecting. Now, that's only 50% of the total ownership, so I don't know that it's enough to stop the LID. And there's also a legal issue about a prior recorded waiver of remonstrance and whether that includes the right to acquire property or not. So I don't know that it matters legally that they weren't able to submit their remonstrances by the 18th, but they wanted to make that point that about half the property owners object to the acquisition element of this particular LID. Now, one way that that acquisition element can be addressed is through the use of curb-tight sidewalks. And I know last time I was here, Public Storage was asking for no sidewalks as part of the proposal, and I understand the city has a strong and well-thought-out policy encouraging sidewalks. So they're backing off of that to the point where we think that curb-tight sidewalks would be acceptable to Public Storage, and then the city could have most of the property owners supporting the LID. The other thing that Public Storage wanted me to say, and it's in the letter, is that they intend to oppose any acquisition with their full resources. So take that as you will. I'm available for any questions, and if there are no questions, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Well, I was going to ask Andrew the same question. What does curb tight sidewalk mean?
And Andrew, I'm sure, will want to come up and comment further, but my understanding is that a typical sidewalk has like a little planting strip between the sidewalk and the street where you can put street trees and landscaping. Curb tight would mean that you eliminate that planting strip so that the sidewalk is there's just a curb and then the street. And the reason that we're asking for that is if you eliminate the planting strip, then I think there'll be room to do the improvement in the existing right-of-way, and so they won't have to acquire property from the property owner. And the reason Public Storage doesn't want to give the property up is either they have to give it up for free, or they have to get compensated for it, but then because it's an LID, then they turn around and have to pay for their own property through the assessments. And they don't think that that's fair. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrew, would you like to come back up and respond to testimony?
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. We send all notices to the legal address, mailing address of record. We do also endeavor to send courtesy notification to folks who are not the legal address of record, such as council, to the property owners. I will say that when we did a previous LID at 135th and Prescott, I sent notification to public storage over the course of the 3 years we were working on the LID, and thing tended to get lost in the mailroom at public storage in Glendale. So obviously we can't assume responsibility for what happens after the U.S. Postal Service addresses it, or delivers it, I should say. More importantly, I had a conversation with Steve earlier this month after the resolution of intent was adopted. So he and I had a telephone conversation. We talked about this upcoming hearing. I walked him through his options, so this should not be a surprise to him in terms of the deadline. In terms of the curb-tight sidewalks, I had a conversation with Steve on that earlier this month, and what I suggested to Steve is that council had given me direction at the July 28th hearing that we weren't going to drop sidewalks. What I suggested to Steve is that we could get the LID formed, go ahead and order the survey, see what we're really dealing with in terms of any obstacles to separating the sidewalks, and if there's topographical constraints or something of that nature that would provide a good reason for not separating the sidewalks, we could look at doing that. I just want to reiterate to council what I said on July 28th, which is I have a project under construction in Park Rose, and the property owners were very cooperative on the right-of-way acquisition. We're trending significantly below budget. So my hope is with a relatively small LID of just four property owners, once we get the survey back, I can hold a property owner meeting, we can discuss the options, and hopefully we can come to an agreement quickly. I would remind public storage that right-of-way costs are a legitimate cost of transportation projects, including LID-funded projects. So to the extent that a property owner is not cooperative on right-of-way acquisition on an LID, it simply results in more cost for the property owner. So my hope is moving forward we can be cooperative on options for reducing cost. Right-of-way doesn't have to be expensive if the property owners are collaborative and cooperative on it. Be happy to answer any other questions you have.
So how many feet of right-of-way and what's the approximate value, do we know?
We don't really start putting values on it, Commissioner, until we go out and do the appraisals. I've been advised by right-of-way not to throw out numbers. Okay. What I will say in general, though, is, and Steve is absolutely correct on this, the cost of right-of-way acquisition are much broader than just the payment for the easements. There's also the staff time, the appraisals, all of that. So, you know, there's some soft costs in there that don't represent payment to the property owners that are, in effect, a burden to the property owners. But we are looking at a 5-foot taking on each side of the street. And I might also just let council know that part of the reason why we like to separate sidewalks, particularly in a freight area, that if you've got trucks with very wide mirrors that are parked right up against the curb and you've got mirrors hanging out over the sidewalk, plus if you have telephone poles in the sidewalk area, your effective 6 feet of clearance can be reduced by the mirrors hanging out over the sidewalk, no parking signs, utility poles, and the like, and so your clearance distance can be pretty small. You may recall from the Water and Yamhill LID that we had previously that I showed you a picture of what a sidewalk looks like when you get the utility poles in there, and the clearance distance for pedestrians can be pretty small. So, but bottom line is we have different options in terms of how we build the sidewalk. I'm not asking council to make a decision on that. You, of course, are free to do that if you wish, but those are all normal design issues that we can work through in the course of survey and design.
And do we ever do some acknowledgement of a donation of right-of-way in terms of the rest of the LID costs, like we sometimes do for donations of property that then goes against SDCs?
I'm not aware of the SDC component of it, but I certainly can have the conversation with the property owners to gauge your interest in donating right-of-way. Because certainly if we get the survey back and have the property owner meeting and they're all interested in donating, you know, we could save the cost of appraisals and all that.
In that case, do we then give them a lesser assessment on the LID?
Absolutely. So to the extent that the LID comes in below budget, then we only charge them what the actual costs are of the LID.
Would the property owner who's donating the easement get a break on their cost compared with other LID participants who aren't donating?
And candidly, no. So my hope is, I mean, obviously, if you have a very large LID with many, many people, it's more problematic to get some people to donate. But my hope is with four property owners, we can sit down and have that conversation. But candidly, if two out of the four agree to donate and the other two don't, then we can't charge a higher cost to the other folks.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Andrew. So this is a first reading, right?
Yes.
Okay, so this will move to second reading next week.
Oh, and Commissioner, I want to mention one other thing. David mentioned the testimony had entered into the record on July 28th. It came in after 5 o'clock the day before the hearing. I didn't have a chance to write responses to it, but if you look, there is the last exhibit in the ordinance has responses to all of those issues that were raised by Steve and Supreme Steel. So I'd encourage council to take a look at that before the second reading next week.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. This will move to second reading. And we will now go to item 1181.
Authorize memorandum of understanding with Oregon Department of Forestry for qualified city personnel to participate in ODF Incident Management Team Shadow Program.
Morning.
Good morning. Patty Reuter, Portland Office of Emergency Management. And
John Knorr, Emergency Operations Division Chief for Portland Fire and Rescue.
This MOU allows qualified personnel with the City of Portland to shadow ODF personnel on the site of a major fire within the state. And so this allows experiential learning, basically. And it is open to all bureaus that have personnel that work within their EOC or their ECC and who have
EOC and
Emergency Operations Center and Emergency Coordination Center, the city's Emergency Coordination Center. The people that are eligible have had to take National Incident Management System training up to the level of 200, and they have to be actively involved within their ECC or EOC. So it's a limited group. And this stemmed from a regional emergency management technical committee coordinated effort to have a one-stop shopping, so to speak, with ODF. The process is that ODF calls Washington County Emergency Management and says tells them that we need help. It's a very rare occasion. They then, the Emergency Management Office of Washington County then calls our office, and we put out an all call for participants in this process. And then they have to have approval by their bureau. They put in their names and are considered to go to the site of the fire.
Yeah. In a shadowing type of format.
Yes, they don't fight fire. They work alongside of the incident commander or the finance person or the section, logistics section, operations section, public information. And ODF is known, Oregon Department of Forestry is known for its expertise in ICS. And it's a hard life out there, but you really learn a lot. I've done it before, and it's a great experience.
I just want to speak briefly on behalf of the Fire Bureau in support of this. These positions that people are going to, these are very high-level management positions within an incident command structure. These are not people on the ground on the fire line putting out the fire, but it's an opportunity. We don't get extremely large incidents, community-wide disasters here. We're very good at handling day-to-day incidents. But when you get a large community-wide disaster, our incident managers need the experience in those as operations section chief, finance section chief, incident commanders, things of that nature to help run a very large community-wide type disaster. And that's what this experience will get us.
Great. Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Carla, could you please call the roll?
I didn't have a sign-up sheet for this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Anybody wish to testify on this matter? Okay, seeing none, please call the roll.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for your work on this. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye. Okay, that brings us to item 1182.
authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to acquire certain permanent easements necessary for construction of the Northeast 148th Water Quality Facilitation Project, number E07177, through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
This is an exciting project. The Bureau of Environmental Services will construct a water quality facility on Northeast 148th Avenue to treat stormwater runoff from over 180 acres that drains directly into the Columbia Slough. And this will protect water quality in the slough and help the city meet its requirements under the federal stormwater, permit that we hold. The construction of this facility does require environmental services to acquire permanent sewer easements. And this ordinance does authorize the Bureau to use the city's eminent domain authority to acquire the necessary easements. Public outreach has been conducted with individual businesses and property owners, and everyone's on board with this project. So that's what this is. And if there's any questions or okay, do we have anybody signed up wishes to testify on this? Or is there anybody in the room that wishes to testify on this?
I have one question.
Oh, okay.
I have one question.
You want staff up here? Okay.
You may be able to answer it anyway. I'm just wondering if these are friendly condemnations.
Yes, negotiations so far have been very smooth. And
give us your name.
Sorry, Linda Berth, Portland Transportation.
Thank you.
Yeah, condemnation. I mean, we don't anticipate needing to file.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so nobody's here to testify, so this will move to second reading.
Thank you.
And that brings us to item 1183.
Authorize an ad work letter agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation for sewer work completed on the MLK Grand Viaduct Project number E10165.
This is a second reading. So vote only. Please call the roll.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye. That brings us to item 1184.
Amend contract with Berger Abum for engineering, permitting, and construction administration of the Circle Avenue Bridge Repair Project.
Morning.
Morning. Emily Hicks, Commissioner Fish's office. This was intended for the consent agenda. It's a contract that was previously approved by council in 2008 for the repair and partial replacement of the Circle Avenue Bridge, which is over Johnson Creek. And it's an amendment that allows for additional work related to difficulties in installation of the new bridge supports, which required additional time in field performing inspections and assuring compliance with permitting requirements related to watershed habitat management. An additional $15,000 to the contract.
Why is it Parks rather than Transportation bringing this forward?
And not Transportation?
Yeah. I mean, is it in a park?
I think it is on parkland. And it's connected to the Springwater Corridor, I believe.
So Parks normally does these rather than Transportation? Because I saw a picture of it. It's a pretty big bridge. I mean, it's a vehicle bridge, right?
It is. I can get more information about where our partnership is with PBOT on this project. I don't believe we're the lead on it, but it will go to a second reading for next week, so I can get that question answered.
Yeah, I was just interested to figure out how it works. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Emily. Does anybody wish to testify on 1184? Okay, seeing no one, this will move to a second reading. And that brings us to our last item, 1185.
Appoint a pool of community volunteers to be available to serve on the Police Review Board.
Morning, Auditor.
Good morning. LaVon Griffin-Vlade, City Auditor. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm happy to be here today. On March 31st, City Council amended the City Code, which governs the process and makeup of Portland Police Bureau's performance and use of force review boards. The new police review board procedures take effect on September 1st, 2010. As part of the changes approved by council, the Police Bureau will select citizen members for the Police Review Board from a pool of volunteers recommended by the City Auditor and appointed by City Council. So since March 31st, we've conducted a recruitment, and I enlisted staff from the Auditor's Independent Police Review Division, a member of the Citizen Review Committee who had also previously served on police review boards, as well as a Police Bureau member appointed by the chief to assist me in the selection of the pool of community volunteers available to participate in the police review boards. If confirmed by council, their term begins September 1st, 2010, and ends August 31st, 2013. So for your approval, I recommend the 19 individuals who are listed on the report and whose bios also appear before you. And you should have a copy of their brief biographies in front of you before I list them and provide highlights of their biographies. I'd like to acknowledge their willingness to contribute to their community and participate in this very important board. So bear with me as I read the names and tell you a little bit about each one of them. I think at least one of the hopeful appointees is here today, and possibly more. So first is Carlos Colderon Marcial. He's a downtown business advisor for the Hispanic Metropolitan Chamber. He's also currently a member of the Oregon State Bar's Client Security Fund, which helps clients who suffer financial losses as a result of attorney misconduct. Number two is B.J. Finley Branch, formerly worked as a State of Oregon civil rights investigator, an adult parole and probation officer, and a child welfare supervisor with the state. She is also the past chair of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs. Edward Hershey is a communications director for Service Employees International Union Local 503. He previously worked as a reporter for Newsday covering criminal justice issues. Number four is Marianne Hyland. She's an attorney and works as the Affirmative Action and Equal Opportunity Director at Oregon Health and Science University, where, among other duties, she administers a civil rights discrimination grievance process. Number five is Rod Kodorov. He's a manager for the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, better known as IRCO. He hires and trains employees as well as provides training and assistance to IRCO's clients. Next is Diane Marsh. She's a surgical nurse at Oregon Health and Science University. She has served as a community member on prior police review boards and believes that in doing so, she serves as a public voice to improve the community police relationship. Anthony McNamer is a partner of McNamer & Company, owner of Expunged Records, and an attorney who represents hip-hop artists. He grew up here in Portland and went to public schools in North and Northeast Portland. Number eight is Patrick Messenger. He's a retired owner of a residential property management business. He has been a board member or chairperson of the Concordia Neighborhood Association in the past. He's also served in the past as a community member on prior police review boards. Number nine is Patricia O'Sullivan. She's a self-employed and semi-retired lobbyist. She has lobbied for the Portland Public School District, as well as the Oregon Department of Human Services, where she developed a diversity policies and reported on DHS diversity to the legislature. Number 10 is Bradley Perkins, self-employed real estate broker. In the past, he has helped organize discussions between the police bureau and the faith community to build understanding of police issues and vice versa. He's been involved in multiple community organizations, including the Community Development and Housing Commission, the Streetcar Committee. Number 11 is Ayub Ramjan. He's a research and development manager for Hewlett-Packard in the printer division. He works with Citizens Against Domestic Violence and the refugee community. He is currently a member of the Citizen Review Committee, and he also served previously on police review boards. Number 12 is Grace Reed. She's retired with continued experience in mediation, education, drama therapy, and addiction counseling. She has training and experience in conflict resolution, and she has worked with at-risk individuals and families and with youth dealing with addictions. She also served on the mayor's gang violence task force. Excuse me. Number 13 is Llewellyn Robinson. She's a retired U.S. customs officer. She has been a member of the Citizen Review Committee since 2004, and she also previously served on police review boards. Number 14, Danny Rosen, retired software quality analyst. He has volunteered with a number of organizations, including as counselor for the Oregon Youth Leadership Seminar, and he has been a member of the Northwest Gender Alliance for over 20 years. He's also been a past member of the police review boards. Number 15 is Mr. Charles Rosenthal, retired engineer, consultant, and manager. He has served on a variety of boards, committees, and commissions for the City of Portland and Multnomah County, including the Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Board and the Public Utilities Review Board. Number 16 is Wilson Sulman. Mr. Sulman is here this morning. He's a retired estimator who worked with mechanical contractors. He served in the U.S. Navy as a radar operator and also did a brief stint on shore patrol. He has volunteered with Salvation Army, and he's been involved in his homeowners association working on neighborhood livability concerns. Number 17 is Eric Terrell. He was a vice president of student services at Sacramento City College, where he administered ethnic heritage programs, women's history programs, and programs for students with disabilities. He was a member of the Citizen Review Committee and now volunteers as an advocate for complainants, appealing the decisions of the Portland Police Bureau. And for the record, your biographies show that he has also previously served as on the police review boards, but this would be his first time serving on the police review board. So I make that correction. Number 18 is Robert Euland, self-employed consultant. He's participated on several boards and committees for the city, including the Citizen Review Committee. He now volunteers as an advocate for complainants appealing decisions of the police Portland Police Bureau. And number 19, the last name that I submit to you today is Sherry Winkleman. She's a retired elementary and middle school teacher and counselor. In addition to having worked for the state's Children's Services Division, she taught workshops on conflict resolution. She's done volunteer remediation work and volunteered at a youth detention facility. So I think that this group of folks represents a broad spectrum of our community, and I'm very happy to submit their names to you for your approval.
Thank you. Mr. Sulman, would you like to introduce yourself or welcome to come on up and say a few words if you wish? You don't have to.
Well, I'd just like to say
Would you please sit down and give us your name for the record?
Wilson Sulman.
Can you raise the microphone? There.
Wilson Solomon.
Okay.
I'd just like to say it's time for me to pay back the city for everything it's done for me, and I look forward to serving in this capacity.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Look forward to having you. Questions?
Auditor Griffin, would you just remind everybody at home as to how this works, is that all 19 don't serve at once?
Oh,
right?
I'm sorry. And that's the point of this being a pool of folks. They rotate through as their schedules permit, and they take turns, and they're selected. One community member serves on the performance review board, so that's kind of like minor issues, and two community members will serve on the review boards that are dealing with issues of force.
And my understanding is you take the list as it comes, and whoever
yes.
can serve, but not random, but you don't select particular people to serve on particular boards. Thank you.
So how are we going to make sure that happens?
Because we also serve on the police review board. And as you'll recall, if we have a concern about any of the members, then the auditor or the police chief can ask for their removal.
But more importantly, if you have a concern, you could
yes.
do that.
Yes.
And then also, just to reiterate, that you wouldn't have a person serve on two boards in a row unless everybody else was not available.
Right, right. I mean, my goal here is to create a large enough pool for the Bureau to draw from and to also make sure that there's balance. And so through our participation, we will make sure that happens.
Okay. No further questions. Do we have anybody wish to testify? I see Michael Callahan.
Okay.
Okay, if you just, again, give us your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Yeah, Michael O'Callaghan, and since I've been before the Police Review Commission, I have a little experience with that, as I testified to you when you had hearings on it. In my process, the commission got one thing right, and that was that the Portland Police Department was involved. Everything else they did was wrong. All their facts were wrong. Their conclusions were wrong. It's very difficult to me to support a process like that. What I've heard here in my experiences is that all these people are nice people, don't get me wrong, and this process is okay. Not to be classist, if you will, but I would assume that most of these people drive cars, if not all of them drive cars, which puts you in a category separate from interaction with the police department. Now, if you're on a bicycle, you have a little more exposure to the police department, but not really much. Walk. Walk and put a pack on your back and see how much interaction you have with the police department. I would appreciate one person on the police conduct or police review that has had contact frequently with the police because they understand how the police operate. They are out of control. Okay? And this commission isn't going to do anything about that. And it is going to be, as we have seen in the past, tragic that is the case. But such is the case for the people who walk with packs. As I have stated in my 10 unanswered questions, most of them deal with out-of-control authority. Where's the control? None. The courts, maybe. Who can sue in the courts? But thank you for your time. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to testify? Okay. Then, Carla, please call the roll.
Leonard?
Well, this particular change is, it's the impact on police transparency in Portland cannot be underestimated. As opposed to a review board that prior to this change was literally handpicked by the police chief and excluded the auditor's office specifically. And I mean that even to include at times threats that the auditor's office couldn't even sit and observe via the IPR director. From a system where really transparency was frowned upon and was looked at skeptically, to this system, which will be implemented, as the auditor said, on September 1st, wherein the auditor is represented through the IPR director, where the citizens that used to be appointed by the police chief are now appointed by the auditor and confirmed by the council as our action will codify today, including having the meetings run not by an assistant chief in the police bureau, but rather a professional facilitator. I cannot overstate, I think, the impact that this significant change in how the police bureau reviews uses of force incidents, misconduct amongst officers will have on the operations of the police bureau, and I mean that all in a positive sense. None of this would have happened, and I want to repeat that, none of this would have happened without the current auditor, Auditor Griffin Belade, agreeing to take the lead on these very significant and challenging issues that were difficult to not only negotiate but to navigate to get to this place. And I want to applaud her for her leadership making this happen, for putting this group of outstanding people together. And contrary to what we heard here today, I do think this is not business as usual. This is something I hope the community focuses on as a significant change that the community has demanded for years in terms of transparency in what happens in police incidents, whether the people are on the receiving end of excessive force or whether people suspect malfeasance on the part of a police officer. It is this board that will review all that and make recommendations to the chief that will then be weighed in by with the auditor and the auditor's office and reports will be published semi-annually, as I recall, of what the board does. So I'm very pleased with where we're at today. I'm anticipating with great positive feelings the board taking its seat on September 1st and look for a new day at the Police Bureau. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Auditor Griffin Vallade, and also Mary Beth Baptista, the Director of the Independent Police Review, and thank you to all of the citizens who are giving their time to be on the review board. This is a very important step forward, and openness and trust building between the police and the community is a must. This is another step that brings us closer to achieving that goal. The diversity of a board like this is crucial, and I appreciate you taking the time to go through all 19 members and explaining some of their background. The members of the board bring a wide variety of skills and come from diverse educational, employment, and ethnic backgrounds. And I'm very pleased to be able to support this. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, this looks like a great group of people from their bios. Many of the members I do know personally and familiar with their competence and impartiality. And so that's great, and it sounds like a very diverse group. And so I'm pleased to support this and wish them well on their way, September 1st. Aye. So the resolution passes, and we are adjourned until Wednesday, September 1st, 9:30. Thank you.